Hi, Jeremy. Thank you so much for coming on to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Let me ask you first, what are the latest polls measuring Prime Minister Netanyahu's approval rating as of now?
Well, the latest poll that I saw, which has to do with a poll that was taken out by Dahaf Company, asking who's mainly responsible for the crisis surrounding the Ramat Gan situation, and only 4% blamed Netanyahu. And to me, that shows a lot more of an approval rating than any number that can tell you about 40 or 50 or 30% that support the prime minister. When a big problem happens and you have a crisis and they look at the prime minister and only 4% think it's their fault, that's a pretty good rating compared to our previous prime minister, Olmert, who had a 3% approval rating.
So you say it may be an 80% approval rating.
I'm saying, you know, if you want to look at it like that. Of course, if you're going to look at the six polls that were taken 2 weeks ago following the Labor Independence Party split, you'll see that the Likud Party has between 26 to 32 seats, depending on the poll that you go with. Something that you can see is even though you might have a situation where Kadima might have the same amount of seats or an additional 1 to 2 seats over Likud, the right-wing bloc party is a lot stronger than you'll see from anything that's close to Kadima. Well, if I look back towards last week and the three no-confidence motions that the opposition presented to try to topple Netanyahu unsuccessfully, I'd say those are the three issues of the past week that might indicate what's happening in the fluctuating week. Those three are, of course, the raising of the indirect taxes, mainly on the gasoline prices, but as well also on the water prices, cigarettes, and alcohol, which comes together with the lowering of the income tax. That's one of them. The second one is the building freeze within Jerusalem, that there's no approval going out for additional building permits to be built up in the eastern part of Jerusalem. And the third is the Al Jazeera leaks, the papers that you saw about what happened with the Kadima administration and their past attempts at a negotiation and a treaty with the Palestinian Authority, which was unsuccessful. Those were the three main things that were in the public eye, I guess you could say, the last week. But if you're looking at polls, you have to look not just at a certain week, you have to look at a trend, unless you definitely have something that's a big thing, like we saw with the split between labor and independence, in which you can definitely see that a lot of the political map has shifted. If you look specifically at the six different polls that were taken out over the last week, as you get to the polls that were taken out later in that week, labor falls as far down as 5 seats. So I'm curious to see when the next round of polls come out where labor is favoring.
Well, if we look in the recent polls that were published 2 weeks ago, it looks basically that if elections were to be held today, it will be the same outcome with some 2 or 3 seats shifting from side to side, but it looks like the same outcome and maybe even an increase in seats for the right-wing bloc. So having said that, what are the chances that Netanyahu and the current Knesset will end its term till November 2013?
2 years ago, I predicted that this government had a strong case for lasting a full term, or at least close to a full 4 years, with elections in about maybe November 2012. Many experts disagreed with me on that. They felt that Netanyahu would fail in his third year, which most prime ministers do here in Israel. The third year is usually the test year to see if they can pass, and most of the times they fail. Now we're entering Netanyahu's third year, and I think the right has learned their lesson from toppling Netanyahu during his first term. And for some reason, I also feel the right wing is afraid of losing seats in the next election, and that also is going to help them in supporting Netanyahu and avoiding elections anytime soon.
where is Netanyahu losing support based on what incident, and who is Netanyahu's biggest threat from the left and the right as of now?
I'd say Netanyahu is mainly losing support from his right-wing base. I believe that assisting the labor split with independents, helping Ehud Barak, might have improved his approval ratings a little bit from the overall public, but I believe that it's hurt him with Likud voters. Let's start with Netanyahu's biggest threat from the right. The only true threat there is Lieberman. Lieberman has received a lot of hype for his loyalty oath bill, the conversion bill, telling Turkey to take a hike after the flotilla, and lately the investigations into leftist funds. It'll be easy for Lieberman to market himself as a right-wing alternative to Netanyahu, at which point Netanyahu needs to move a little bit closer to the right center. Now to the left, the Israeli left in Israel is, at least in my opinion, and not just my opinion, many people's opinion, at an all-time low. I know that former Knesset speaker from Labor, Avram Burg, is working with former Meretz MK Mosi Raz, current Chadash MK Dov Hanin, as well as former leader of the Labor Party, Mitzna, and they're trying to attempt a small bang, what they're calling it, that will include MKs and Meretz and Labor and create a new socioeconomic party that they might even have someone like Shelly Yachimovich at the head of. And the left's new shift is really a focus on the economy as opposed to security or the peace process. And an economic party on the left could take away votes from Netanyahu as well as Kadima, especially if Lieberman goes ahead and takes more of the further right sector that some of Netanyahu's support came from in the previous elections.
Well, here's the point. If Kadima loses seats to the left on a social economic base, that party, even if it's considered left, has a bigger chance to join the next Netanyahu government if it's formed on a base of unity rather than with Kadima that will lose a lot of support and won't be even considered as an alternative.
There's definitely a lot in what you just said right there. A lot of people forget that most of Kadima's MKs used to be in the Likud, and for the most part they agree on most issues. Even if Lieberman comes ahead with the most seats in the next election, I believe that Likud and Kadima would go into a national unity government to avoid having Lieberman as the prime minister of Israel. And I think if, especially if you have that big socioeconomic party that comes up on the left, there's even a chance that you might see a merger if some, if not all of Kadima, back into the Likud, depending, of course, if it's Shaul Mofaz leading as opposed to Tzipi Livni.
Do you see if the economic issues take a bigger stand in Israel's politics, any revolt in the Likud party from candidates that we haven't seen them emerge as leaders on the diplomatic front on whatever occurred with the freeze or the peace process?
I don't really think so. I think if you're looking at the furthest flank of people on the right wing, if you're talking about your Danny Danones or your Benny Begins, I just go back again to last week. Last week there was a motion brought up for no confidence on the fact that Netanyahu's government is not allowing building in East Jerusalem right now. Again, if you have a building permit, you can build. There's no construction freeze, but they're just not allowing any new permits. So when you have a situation like that, and you have Danny Danone saying, I'm supporting Netanyahu on that, with his finger pressing the button, to me that says a lot more than whatever he might go out and tell the press. So I don't really see anybody that, I mean, even if we're talking about Tzipi Chotubeli, no one even tried the shtick that they pulled with the land reform, where they tried not to be present for the actual vote. Therefore, people could understand what they wanted out of it. The only one person who really has any vocal opposition, I'd say, to Netanyahu that matters is Speaker of the House Reuven Rivlin. but that's someone who's pretty easy to deal with because
he's running for as president.
Yeah, yeah. As long as you promise him support running for president when Shimon Peres' term is up, he's pretty much willing to do what you want him to do. So I really don't feel this is like, you know, if we're talking about Netanyahu's first term where the right brought him down, I mean, one of the people who brought him down, one of the main people, was Benny Begin. Now Benny Begin is very close to Netanyahu. David Ra'em is, no one's heard from him in about a decade. I think he's a mayor up in a suburb of Haifa. Michael Kleiner, except for his Tea Party, Likud thing that he tried to do a couple months ago, he hasn't really been heard of. I really don't see any big name coming up. Even Moshe Arends has been talking positively about Netanyahu, which is something that I would not have even believed 3 years ago if you would tell me that that would happen today.
Is it because of change in his personal relationship with these people, or Netanyahu is now acting better as prime minister as his previous term?
Well, that's something that I could only give you a guess on, because I obviously don't know that for sure. I think in a lot of the situations, one of the things that Netanyahu has been a lot better about this term is that he picks up the phone and he talks with his ministers a lot more. He has a lot more meetings in Four Eyes. He does what he needs to do, even if it might be considered a waste of time, just to ease people's egos a little bit, which is a very important thing to remember in politics, even if you're prime minister.
Ben Kasvit, a vocal critique of Prime Minister Netanyahu, praised him this week for handling this crisis, that he demonstrated leadership.
When it comes to the media, the answer is that no matter who's in power, they're going to be doing what they can to topple that prime minister. When it comes to elections, all of the media companies get the most press. They get to sell the most advertising space. The best, the people who make out the most money from elections, time and time again, are the media. And when you have a system like Israel in which you have elections pretty much every 3 years, you do what you can to bring them about as often as you can. So I don't necessarily know if it has so much to do with the policies as opposed to just, you know, the greed for money there, but it's a definite thing that's been known that for years in Israel, the press has been very liberal. I think that it's a little bit better than it used to be, and if you're talking about Ben Kasvit, it's true that he's very vocal against Netanyahu, but I know Ben Kasvit's father, who's a Likud Central Committee member, so when it comes to some things, especially in times where the country really needs to unify, and I think one of those is picking the chief of the army, because it's just such an important position. Just about any poll you take, you're going to find that whoever is the Ramatkal is going to have a higher approval rating than the prime minister and pretty much any person in the public eye. This is a country where just about every citizen has been to the army. Most of us serve in the reserves, and we care a lot about who that person is. I'd say the biggest problem surrounding the crisis over there is that there was no person who everyone thought should be that candidate. And you had a situation where the past two deputy Ramatkals were not really candidates for taking the big spot. And that meant that you had to go down a little bit lower and get someone who was a little bit younger, and it was not an easy process. I think that when it comes to how Netanyahu dealt with it, I think the original way that he tried to go with it, finding someone to be there for the next 60 days so that they could spend more time figuring things out, it makes a lot of sense to me personally. I know a lot of people didn't like that. They wanted Ashkenazi's term to get extended. But the problem with extending Ashkenazi's term, even if you like him as a Ramatkal, and you don't like Defense Minister Barak, which is practically the entire country at this point. But you got to know that if you have a defense minister and Ramat Kaul who are not talking to each other, that's not going to be a good thing going into the current climate in the Middle East with potential unrest in just about every neighboring country. So you want to have someone who's on the same page. So I'd rather have someone who's good enough to be the deputy and have him for a little bit time up on the top spot as long as he's on speaking terms with the defense minister. What Netanyahu actually did is he came in and said, I'm going to be the responsible adult who says, we're not going to do something like that even. We're going to go in and we're going to pick one of the other candidates and we're just going to go with it. If he was good enough to be a candidate, and I'm talking about Benny Gantz, then he should be good enough to be the Ramat Kaul. And I don't think Barak was happy with that. That wasn't Barak's first choice. And from what I understand, it wasn't his second choice either. But Netanyahu went in and showed who his boss. And that's the kind of stuff that it's not just the press is happy to see, but just about everyone here in Israel.
Prime Minister Netanyahu set a goal when he came into office. He said his three goals are recognize perils, seize opportunities, and forge unity. Now, following the failed peace talks, the WikiLeaks, PeliLeaks, Iran's grown influence in the region, and the current situation in Egypt, what are the steps Netanyahu will take to face these challenges this year and the years to come? And based on what measure will the Netanyahu government be determined as a success or a failure?
I think the stability of the peace deal with Egypt might be the biggest challenge Netanyahu faces for the rest of this year and perhaps for the rest of the term. But on the positive note, that means less clashes with his coalition partners and perhaps even less arguments with the opposition, because if there's one thing that brings the country together, that's tough times. And to me, in the short term, Netanyahu's term will be considered a success or a failure based on how Netanyahu is able to guide the Israeli economy. If he succeeds, he'll be reelected, quite simply. But as for the long term, I think his term will really, you know, whether it's a success or a failure will be determined on how we prepared for Iran and if this came to a worst-case scenario where there was even a minor scuffle with Iran or whatever it was, did Netanyahu do enough to prepare the country for that?
Finally, you're described as the political man of comedy. Would you give me such a glimpse of some of your latest stand-up jokes?
Sure, sure. I've been working on some of my American material because I plan on doing a tour there later in the summer. And I'm actually from Chicago, so I decided to write a couple jokes about being the only Republican in Illinois and how it is for me. And just going there to vote in the last elections and seeing all these, in the polling station, all these bumper stickers of Obama, I go up to the polling station guy and I said, I think this is a violation of a couple laws. He's like, don't worry. Senator Obama says it's all right. I have another one that I'm driving in my car and I got pulled over. And the cop asks me for my license and registration. I give it over to him. And then he asks me where my Obama bumper sticker is. It's like, I'm sorry, I don't have an Obama bumper sticker. It's like, okay, I'm sorry, sir. Can you please step out of the vehicle? Can you please take your hands and put them up in the air? That's right. Now, can you kick over to me? Your wall? Yeah, thank you. You want to explain to me again why I don't have an Obama bumper sticker? Because I'm a Republican? All right, sir, I'm going to have to ask you to come with me down to the station.